Hello, everybody. I am Mel Barrett, and welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we question the F out of everything. I am not in my normal podcast studio, as I'm sure you can tell, but I promised you an update about the Lindsay Clancy trial. So here I am. I am in an Airbnb at the beach with, this is the first time there haven't been six 17-year-old girls in the room. So I took my opportunity. I'm here with you all. And I just wanted to give you it's not going to be a very long video, but it's going to be a quick update about what happened yesterday on day four of the Lindsay Clancy trial. And I'm going to get to it right after a quick break.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, allegedly.
I'm Smile.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Happy gay summer, Mel.
Happy hump day, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm not humping anybody. I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Happy Saturday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
Oh, no.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and my mic is muted.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and that's Briscoe.
And welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we swat the haters aside with our astute takes and humor and joy.
Oh, the joylessness of those people. Blags.
You hear it first in the break in the story. One little crack and the whole thing gets wary. A witness swears, but the timeline bends. A smile too smooth and the trail just ends. Mel Barrett says, hold up, look. Rebecca Lavoie follows every thread. If it feels too neat, then it's not the truth. There's a shadow line running through the room. Something's off, something's off. You can feel it in the bones. Something's off, something's off. When the facts won't come home. Something's off, something's off. And the case won't stay in place. Something's off. We're the ones who chase.
We're gonna go members only.
Yeah, we're the ones who chase. Wait, did that witness just blink three times? Something's off. Something's off.
Hello, everybody. Happy Saturday. Oh, my hair's crazy. Uh-oh. We got some beach hair going on. So right off the top, obviously, this is not my normal location. The lighting's a little bit weird. I'm trying to work with it. I'm also on my backup mic, so if it sounds weird and looks weird, it's because it is weird. But we are here from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I just wanted to say hi to y'all. That's it. Okay, bye. No, just kidding. Hey, MDI Twilo. Thanks for becoming a new member. We got a few people in the chat. Let's give everyone a couple more minutes to get in. This was a little impromptu. I just scheduled it like 45 minutes ago when I knew I was going to have a break. So I wanted to jump on here with y'all. How's everyone doing? I'm obsessed with Mel's beach hair. I'm glad you're obsessed with it because it's nuts. It's acting nutty today. Thanks, Lady Harlot. Bay Harbor Beauty. Hello. Hope you're having a good vacay, Mel. It isn't vacay yet. We are in, what mode are we in? We're in a holding pattern right now because actually, and I have to say, like I said, six 17, 18 year old girls, in an Airbnb with me and Lindsay and the dog, and they're doing really well. I'm really proud of them. It hasn't been too wild yet. We'll see what happens tonight. They're all heading back to the city tomorrow and Lindsay and I are going to stay on until Tuesday. So you will be able to catch me here on Monday at 9:30 a.m. with Miss Emily C., which I'm really excited about. We're going to talk about the FOIA and find out documents. There were some pretty big revelations about Brian Albert and Brian Higgins in those documents that just dumped. So dumped? What an awful word. Just dumped. Yeah, so Emily and I are going to be going over that on Monday. I'm still going to be covering the Lindsay Clancy trial. Emily and I are going to talk about that briefly, but we're mostly focusing on her site that she's compiled with Kyle Sharkey and Dee Dee and Corey Hopkins and all the amazing people who are out there fighting the good fight to get us the information that we so deserve after, what is it, almost 4 years now that we've been doing this Karen Reed thing. I love these document dumps. I for one, in my research and anytime I'm investigating a case, discovery, case files, police files, those are my favorite things to go through. I always find good nuggets, some Easter eggs in there. And I saw, I'm going to have to do a little bit of work tomorrow to go through some of the newer documents, but I saw one of the documents that came out was, I believe it was an affidavit by Brian Albert to Tully, talking, detailing an interaction he and Brian Higgins had when they were out at one of the baths in Canton, where they ran into Tom Beattie and the Currents. And in the affidavit, Brian Albert and it sounds like Tom Beattie go outside, and Tom Beattie tells him he thinks that there's something weird, something's off, shall we say, about the relationship between Brian Albert, Higgins, John, Karen, everything that's going on. And it sounds like it was a testy exchange. But the other thing that I found most notable about that document was that Brian Albert says that Higgins doesn't know the Currents. But you guys know, if you were with us on our last cross roast when we went over the text messages between Karen Reed and Brian Higgins, or at least some of them, that Karen talked to him about the Currents. So Brian Higgins does know who the Currents are. So why did Brian Albert lie about it? I think that's a question we're going to have to talk out on Monday with Emily C. On Tuesday night, since Rebecca's out of town all next week, on Tuesday night, I'll probably do an earlier stream to get caught up with Lindsay Clancy stuff on Tuesday. I don't have the time yet because we're traveling back that day. And then on Tuesday night at 7 p.m., I'm going to have Miss Ellen Marie Marsh in the studio with me. And it's going to be members only because it's probably going to be a little rowdy. Not going to lie. Wednesday, I'm going to have Sarah Carradine on from Crime Scene. We're going to talk to Lindsay Clancy, possibly some of the Kohlberger stuff that's just happening right now. I'm going to be covering the new documentary that came out on Netflix about the Idaho murders. And I'm going to be on Crime Scene talking about that. I think it's on the 6th. Don't quote me on that. I'll let you guys know. Thursday, I will probably be doing a solo stream at some point, and then I'll be on Maggie Freeling's new show that night. And then Friday, we're closing the week out with Auntie Deb. Jimmy's coming over, and we're going to have a big gay time. So that's the schedule going forward. We've got one really good members only happening, like I said, on Tuesday night. And then it's just amazing co-host and jam-packed week. And of course, covering Lindsay Clancy and everything that's happening with Karen Reed, Turtle Boy, all the stuff. But today, I wanted to give you a quick update. I wasn't sure if they were going to come back to court yesterday after they went to the viewing with the jury. So they went to the CVS. They went to 3V, the restaurant, V3, 3V. And then they also went to the Clancy's house, which is now owned by somebody else, obviously. From what I hear, our friend Nate Eaton from EastIdahoNews.com did a little breakdown. I'm scrolling here. If I freeze up, it's because the Wi-Fi sucks, and I'm sorry, but I promise you I'm still here and I'm coming back. So he mentioned that the cops and the court officers were keeping media back at the viewing. So they had to stay back 100 feet. And that Lindsay Clancy chose not to go into her old house, which obviously that makes total sense. And then after that, they came back to court. We had a few more witnesses yesterday. I mean, the Commonwealth is just shoving these first responders down our throat, and it's not getting any better for them. I will say Kevin Reddington spent a good deal of time on Cross yesterday, which we're going to watch a little bit of that. I'm trying to stick to what Kevin Reddington is doing, because I know his focus is not on giving gory details about the children. He's focused on Lindsay, and that's where my focus is. So I'm going to play some of the Cross from him, which I think is important. But let me just get through some chats first. The other Emily is at the nail salon, but popped in to say happy Saturday. Have fun at the nail salon. The beach hair look. Yep. This is it. This is what's happening. This is what happens when salt water air gets near my hair. Happy Saturday, everyone. We're doing a Golden Girls crossword and Mel and American flag. God bless America and the Golden Girls. I'm so glad you're here, Cindy Lou. Nikki says, I think the field trip was totally unnecessary and a plot by the prosecution. The home is currently owned by people with no children. Totally different look. Yeah, I mean, I think that every step of the way, the prosecution has been trying to play on the jury's emotions. And so when they're doing that, you know, that's why they're saying all these gory details about the kids, and they're having emotional first responders recount and cause them more trauma, their experience taking the children out of the house. And then to have the jury walk down the steps into the basement where three young children were unalived is just, ugh, it's harrowing. It's uncomfortable. Keep hearing doors. I'm expecting the doors behind me right here to like burst open and the six kids to come in. I will let you know if that happens. Well, you'll see it actually. And I won't have to let you know. They're all come flying in probably in bikinis. So I'm going to have to shut it down real quick. Motions in CPA says my work bestie lives on Rehoboth Beach. I hope you enjoy your time with the chaos. We just have one more night of chaos. Actually, it hasn't been that bad. And then tomorrow we'll have our own little vacay. Rehoboth is hopefully where I'm going to retire if that day ever happens. I'm not sure it will. I don't know if I'll ever be able to retire, but this is where I would like to be. I got to play, I think I mentioned to you guys the other day that I play tennis at Dave Marshall Tennis Center, which is like Dave's a big time coach of the pros. And I've learned so much from him. And whenever I'm in Rehoboth, I go over there and try to play as much as I can. So Lindsay and I actually did a like 2 hour long session this morning. It was a great workout. It was also really good tennis. And I feel great. And after this, I'm going to walk down to the beach and get myself some ice cream. So I am having a great time. Thank you, Dawn. Aaron rambles on, says, I can tell my daughter Delaware exists since you're coming in live from there. It does exist. It's a beautiful state. I love it here. It's like all farmland and ocean. It's amazing. Hi, Mel in chat. Hi, Becky. You are so smart, Mel, catching nuggets. That's very sweet of you, Nikki. Sometimes I sound like an idiot because I'm like yelling about shit, but I'll take that. Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. Yeah, Joy, this is why I focus on his cross. Joy says, I noticed Reddington only crosses about info to do with Lindsay, not the kids. He doesn't think that the kids, first of all, he doesn't think they should be, you know, moving forward with these charges, and they shouldn't even be in court about this. But if they're going to have to be in court, he's going to focus on Lindsay, because that's what it's about. Yeah, Robin, the CW is trying to inflame the jury as much as possible. I totally agree. Andrea said, I really think the prosecution's behavior will backfire and the jury is going to hate them for it, and they're seeing through what they're doing. Yep. I agree. I hope. Lady Harlot said, y'all are saints for signing up for a horde of teens. You and Lindsay must be the cool moms. We are the cool. That's why we're doing this. We are the cool moms. Everyone always is at our house. Hey, Glarer, how you doing, Will? Everybody, if you can just take a moment to send our Glarer just made me think of this. I don't know why. But if you can just send some good thoughts to our friend, the baker. He's having surgery. He was went to the emergency room, and he's not feeling so great right now. So just send him some love and some light, and let him know that you're thinking of him. Okay, I think I got through all of the comments, and I think we have a good number of people in here. Let's see. I guess a couple more housekeeping things. Thanks so much for all the new subscribers, by the way. We're getting close to 11,000, which makes me very happy. That air conditioner is so loud. Can you guys hear it? It like clicks on. It's so loud. So if you like us, there are many ways you can show your appreciation. Oh, thanks for the 10 jewels, E. Chase. Floating hearts. You are welcome to become a member. We have a great time usually on Monday nights when we do our cross roast, and we also do pop culture members only streams, which are fun. And then, you know, obviously like the video, subscribe to the channel, share, tell your friends. And if you feel so inclined or are able, please send us a tip. It's the only money that we make that YouTube doesn't take 30% of. So you can tip through Venmo, Cash App, or PayPal. All of our tipping stuff is at the top of the page. I'll probably put it in the chat at some point. You can also scan the QR code on the screen. But tips are super, super helpful to us because YouTube doesn't take any money from us. Super chats are also obviously welcome. We're not the kind of channel that only reads super chats. I like to stay involved in the chat and talk it out with you guys. So, but I do appreciate the super chats. It helps us quite a bit. Okay. Let's get into, I've already got this pulled up. I've got to add a screen here, and I'm in StreamYard, and StreamYard doesn't like that sometimes. So if I freeze up, just stay with me. I will get back to you, I promise. But we are going to start off. So we had testimony yesterday from witnesses Mark Anthony Mafio, Richard Lepard, Dr. Mark Joseph Tenorwitz, and Melissa Arcadepain. So we're going to start off with Mark. I'm not playing Mark's testimony, the direct, because it's really not worth it. What we are going to do is I'm going to focus on the cross, and we're just going to play a little bit of it, and then we'll get into the next witness. So this is Mark Anthony Mafio. He's a detective with the Duxbury Police Department, and we're going to start with his cross. And here we go. Let me know if you guys can hear it, if the sound is okay. I am going to speed it up just a little bit. Here we go. Can I see the exhibits that were just introduced? Yeah.
Morning.
Morning.
I've got a couple of other photographs that I'd like to just, since you were at the hospital at some point.
Trigger warning, I think these are pictures of Lindsay in the hospital. So,
condition was when you went in the hospital and saw her. I don't recall those being on her legs, but I'm not 100% sure. But other than that, yes. Other than that, yes. Correct. So, I would offer that warning if I could.
Any objections?
Let me approach.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Kevin Reddington is like, really? All right, let me get through this. Sidebar.
At some point, had a chance to take a look at her face, I imagine, sir.
Correct.
Is that fair and accurate depiction?
All right, guys, that's as loud as I can get it because Reddington isn't talking into a mic.
That's correct.
All right, that may be admitted.
And this, you said that there was some cuts on her wrist.
Yes.
That's a fair and accurate depiction?
Correct.
And cuts on the neck as well?
Correct.
And
I'm glad we can't see that one up close. It's really bad.
The front.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Those photos may be admitted.
So far, the only thing that Kevin Reddington has shown has been pictures of Lindsay's injuries, which are hard to look at.
Thank you.
But he's kept it sort of away from us.
You another exhibit. This would have already been introduced into evidence, and this would be exhibit 112.
All right, trigger warning.
This would also depict the area.
We're zooming in on this one, so just
the wrist, is that correct?
Correct.
There's your loins.
Likewise, 111 also shows the cuts on the neck. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, when you went to the house, you were a detective at this point, correct?
Correct.
And obviously, you're working in tandem at this time with the state police. They were also investigating, right?
Correct.
But you were the detective for the town of Duxbury?
One of them, yes.
One of them, okay. And one of the things counsel had asked you about was the clothing that Lindsay was wearing, and it was cut off, right?
Correct.
So I'm just going to show you and ask if this appears to be a fair and accurate depiction, rendition of, for example, one of her items of clothing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know that, so I'm just going to just make sure it's in. That's all.
Does that show that there's blood on that item of clothing?
Not that I see.
Okay. Was there some type of residue of paint or something on the clothing, if you recall?
I don't recall, no.
Did you notice on the pants any blood on the jeans? Well, if you recall.
I don't recall, no.
How about the, I guess it would be the top that was worn. Did you notice any blood on that?
No.
Was there a bra that was cut off, if you recall, sir?
Yes, there was.
And the blood seeped through the clothing?
Okay, I just want to pause for a second. The only reason that we're looking at this stuff is because the prosecution has really, really, really been downplaying. I think they've come as close to saying that she faked her attempt at unaliving herself. And so Reddington is trying to show a stark contrast, obviously, to the jury. I had a couple of tips come in. Sorry, I just wanted to say thank you. Tammy, thanks so much for the $50. That's super generous of you. You are a treasure yourself, lady. And then Mary, thanks for the $20. My new favorite podcast for all the things. Thanks for being here, Mary, and thanks for the tips. Super appreciate y'all. All right, let me get back to this. I'm going to speed it up just a little bit because Reddington sort of takes his time. We're going to go up to 1.5. And I'm going to mute my mic so you guys can hear it all right.
Into the bra itself, is that correct?
Correct.
And that would be obviously from outside the clothing and then into the bra that was being worn, right?
Correct.
They're already in evidence. They've been marked, so I don't see this necessary marking again. They're the same photographs.
Well, I'll trust the representation there in evidence. I don't want to involve the court. So if they're already in evidence, then that's good.
I just admitted them through second marking.
But the bottom line is that you do agree that there was certainly blood on the interior and exterior clothing that she was wearing, right?
That's correct.
You'd also agree, sir, that there was blood in the area from the outside of the backyard directly underneath the window. Is that correct? Would you agree with that if you remember looking at it?
That is correct.
The ground, the snow, and the leaves that were underneath. Of course, there were a lot of people walking around, but you could see the blood.
Correct.
Directly underneath the window, right?
The back window.
You noticed blood was on the window sill itself on the second floor, one hand, one mark on that window ledge?
Yes.
You also noted blood that at some point had gone onto the two shingles that were in the area underneath that ledge, underneath that window, right?
Correct.
I don't have blood on the floor, on the ground, with the EMT documents?
No objection.
That may be admitted.
Thank you. Now, the state police went and got a search warrant, right?
Correct.
And you were there when they were searching?
Correct.
You guys were helping out, obviously. It was a group effort to search the house for relevant or material evidence, right?
Correct.
Now, one of the things that was seized were pill bottles, is that right?
Correct.
You know why they were seized?
I do not.
Did you seize any pill bottles?
I did not.
Were you there when the state police seized the pill bottles?
I was.
Do you recall that the pill bottles were seized from, for example, in the kitchen? You opened up a cabinet and there were right on a bunch of them lined up on a shelf.
I can't attest to that. I wasn't present for that.
Why don't I ask you this? Where did they get the pill bottles from?
You have to ask them. I wasn't there when they seized the bottles.
You weren't there?
I wasn't in that room. We were in multiple rooms at the time.
So I may stand corrected. I'm sorry. I thought I asked you if you were there when the state police were seizing the bottles, and I thought you said you were.
I was in the house, correct.
In the house, but yes. You weren't there when they were seizing anything.
Correct.
How about up in the bedroom? Did you go up in the bedroom?
I did.
Did you observe the blood on the floor?
I did.
Did you observe when the bedroom? It was very cold, right?
Yes.
Hold on just a second, guys. I just wanted to bring up what Jess is saying because this is how I understand it, and I think it's pretty clear that the Commonwealth has been using a lot of hyperbole, exaggerating, you know, the whole thing that we went through the other day where they're trying to explain that, you know, Lindsay somehow slithered down the side of the house as opposed to jumping out. I feel like because they don't have a case, they're just grasping at straws. And this is another point. I've said this before and I've said it to Rebecca and I've said it to you all. To me, their entire case hinges on that web search she made and calling in the order for Patrick to go pick up dinner, because the Commonwealth says that she chose a place that wasn't their normal takeout place, and she mapped out the entire thing so she would know exactly how long she would have while Patrick was gone to do all the damage that she did. But Lindsay has said in her civil suit, and like Jess is saying here, Jess says, catching up, but have to share this tidbit. 3B is 2 minutes from CVS. She picked it because it was close to CVS, regardless of how far from her house. CW misleading again. Yeah, she was worried about Cora. She was worried about Cora and getting Cora's medicine. She asked Patrick to go and pick up medicine and pick up dinner, and she mapped it out because that's the kind of person she is. She seems very type A, or she was. And she was like, here's the closest, you know, this is CVS and the restaurant's right here. Let's just go ahead and order from there. We don't, you know, even if we don't normally do that, the CVS is close to it. And since you have to go there, she didn't want him gone out of the house for very long. I think that was her motivation, was to keep him, to get him back to the house as quickly as possible, because she didn't trust herself and she felt unsafe and she was starting to hear voices. The fact that the Commonwealth keeps trying to say this wasn't their regular, you know, takeout spot or whatever it might be, and she was looking for a route that was the farthest away, is kind of just bullshit, in my opinion. And they're really grasping at straws. But I do feel like that's their entire case. And I feel like it's already been shut down so many times. They can play on the emotions of the jury, but getting all 12 of them to agree, I think is going to be a very big uphill battle for them. So, all right, back to it.
It was open, right?
Correct.
And when you went into the bedroom, you made observations as a detective of certain items, such as, does this appear to be a fair, accurate rendition of the floor, blood drops on the floor?
It does.
In the bedroom?
Yes.
Is this a indication of the bed itself, the right side of the bed, additional blood that was located on the floor next to the books?
Yes.
Does this appear to be the nightstand that was next to the bed?
It does.
And do you see what's on top of the nightstand?
Yes.
But what's on top of the nightstand?
There's two cups, a knife, looks like a jar or something, and maybe a clock.
Okay. Also blood drops?
Correct.
This is a additional photograph moving farther down towards the right side of the bed?
Correct.
This is a close-up of the knife that was on the nightstand, as well as the little cup that was there, and something that says deep sleep pillow spray. You see that?
Yep.
And that was on that top. Furniture, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And this again is an area depicting various items of clothing. It looks like a little headband, a wire perhaps to charge a phone, and blood on the floor.
Correct.
And this shows the location of the bed. Additional photograph of the blood towards the end of the bed and also the area of the window, right?
Correct.
Okay. Enough of these, Judge?
No, back to that photograph.
Can I see counsel in regards?
Okay, sidebar. Let me get through it.
Just follows through along the
edge. And we're still going over blood.
Correct. Was there also, like, if you recall, one of those full-length mirrors?
I don't.
No. I don't.
Right. Any objection to that? All right, those pictures may be admitted.
So you had nothing
to do. Hold on a second, counsel. I'm going to mark these.
So you had nothing to do with the seizure of any of the pill bottles, sir?
Correct.
And you don't have a memory of looking in the cabinet in the kitchen and seeing a number of journals or spiral-bound notebooks and books?
Correct.
Was that pretty much the extent of your involvement with this case that night?
That night, yes.
And you really didn't get involved with any further investigation on this matter as far as seizing evidence, except for what you testified to, right?
We did seize. I located the laptop in the hallway closet.
Let me just show you guys. Here is where I understand the CVS and the restaurant to be. And it's 3 minutes. I may be wrong. If I am, let me know. But let me pull this up real quick. There's a CVS right next to the restaurant. It's 3 minutes. It's a 7-minute walk. Let me think about it that way. Okay. Can y'all see this? So this is 3B right here. And where did it go? Yeah, CVS is right here. CVS. 3V. It's like across the street. That's why she chose it. I know that it's, I know that some people really want to make it seem like she wanted to take as much time as she, or wanted him to take as much time as he possibly could. But I just, I don't think that's what her mind, I don't think that's what was going on in her brain at that point. And if he didn't go to that one, then I don't know. But maybe that's the one she meant him to go to. I'm not sure. I do not buy, I mean, and this is my opinion, I do not buy that she was trying to get him out of the house. She didn't want to be alone. She had said that before. She'd already told people that she was having unaliving thoughts for herself, and she'd already told her husband and their parents that she was thinking of hurting the kids. You're not being mean, CC Nags. I think that we're just simply making the point that there is a CVS right next to the restaurant. So we don't, I don't know if that's the one she Googled. That I would like to know the answer to. You're not being mean at all. There's CVS's on every other block too in New England. Okay, let's get back to it. Hold on. Okay. I almost didn't put it on the screen. I almost did it again, you guys.
Okay. And that was, I believe, seized by the state police as well.
Okay. Anything else you recall? How about, do you remember
when you guys were searching, or you went to the state police searching, did they open up raw to the nightstand that was next to the bed with a number of pill bottles in it?
Again, I wasn't present when that was taken, so I can't attest to that.
How about Apple Watch, no?
I don't recall.
You redirect.
All right, nothing further on this witness. Oh, wait, no. Just kidding. Hold on. Let me just go back a little bit. So
that didn't need to be there before crime scene services, correct?
Correct.
And that, in your experience, is that normal?
Yes.
And in 10 years.
Okay.
Cool. Turn your button in. Can you redirect?
Sir, when you were at the hospital with Lindsay Clancy, with the defendant, were the medical staff in the emergency department actively treating the wounds to her neck and her wrists?
No, they were not.
And when you came back to the home at 47 Summer Street to secure the scene and wait for crime scene services, nobody went into the house that didn't need to be there before crime scene services, correct?
Correct.
And that, in your experience, is that normal?
Yes.
And so were you present when any of the photographs that were shown to you by defense counsel were taken?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So your testimony today about those photos is your best memory of what the scene looked like at that time?
Yes.
And as far as your role in the search warrant execution, fair to say there were quite a number of state police, Duxbury officers, as well as crime scene troopers on scene in the house.
That's
during
correct.
That. And each person, did they have their own kind of role in what they were doing?
Correct.
And did you kind of stay to your area?
Yes.
And you indicated that you only found a laptop in the first floor closet, correct?
Correct.
And so any of the other manners in which the rooms were searched, you were not a part of?
Correct.
Thank you. Nothing further.
You didn't have to stay in the area as a detective of the Duxbury Police Department, did you?
Correct.
So you were able to go and assist with the search and go into the different rooms and look for potential evidence, right?
That's correct.
And do you remember approximately how many Duxbury police officers were in or about the house, either outside, on the porch, on the deck, in the house, downstairs, upstairs?
I don't.
Would it be more than 10?
No, I wouldn't say more than 10.
How about state police? You remember how many there were of them?
No.
So all told, when you consider that the sheriff's department wasn't there too, were they, if you recall? Okay. Sometimes they send them to take pictures.
Yeah.
I don't know if they, okay. Would you agree that there were probably more than 10 officers from state police and Duxbury police that would be doing this investigation?
Correct.
All right. A number of police cruisers, and then you have perhaps, just asking, the yellow tape, you know, yes. Crime scene, don't pass it and all that.
Correct.
Now, if I was, for example, to show up and pull up in my car and get out, and they're not going to let me wander in the house and look around, are they?
Correct.
I mean, that's just for law enforcement officers only until they clear the scene.
Correct.
That's after they execute their search warrants and find whatever evidence is relevant, in their opinion,
correct,
that they seize, right?
Yes.
Once the scene is clear, then people are able to go back into the home, right?
Right.
And you don't know, I would imagine, when they clear the scene.
Correct.
Thank you. That's all we have.
Anything on that?
No,
all right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, Richard Lepard.
Okay, so the next one is Richard Lepard, and he is a patrolman with the Duxbury Police Department. yeah, I think it's important. Let's just go back to the CBS thing for a bit. He may have gone to the Kingston one, but she may have been thinking that, hey, I'm going to make this easier on you and quicker. The CVS that's right next to the restaurant is here. There was no prescription to be picked up. It was just stool softener. So I don't, he may have chosen the CVS that he went to. Doesn't really matter. The point of the matter is that just because she mapped something out, that it doesn't mean that she was trying to have him out of the house for a long period of time. He wasn't even out of, he was gone for a half an hour. She did all of this in like a half an hour. And I don't think that, I mean, it's my opinion, but I don't think she was planning it as she was mapping out and calling the restaurant and all this stuff. You know what I mean? Let's see. And guys, be nice to everybody. Just because you guys argue about where the CVS is located and where it's not, we can all be kind to one another. So let's try to do that. And we don't need to add any more foolishness to this case. So let's just be nice to one another. Yeah, it wasn't, he was gone for a half an hour. That was it. He was gone for 30 minutes. And this all happened in 30 minutes. It's terrifying. But that's what happened. All right. So on to the next witness. I think Reddington does cross this guy as well. Yeah, this is pretty short. Let's make sure that we have the speed up. Yeah, we're at 1.5. I'm going to mute myself.
And can you spell your last name for the record?
Lippard.
And how are you employed?
I work for the Duxbury Police Department.
And how long have you been a police officer?
6.5 years.
Have you worked for Duxbury the entire time, or did you work for Police House?
The entire time.
What's your current assignment at the Duxbury Police?
Patrolman.
Back in January of 2023, were you also on patrol then?
Sorry, guys. We don't actually need to listen to the direct because it's all the same shit. Let's go to the cross, though, and see what he does with cross here.
Mr. Reddington.
Morning.
Good afternoon. So, young man, working for the town of Duxbury, and you were detailed to the home initially, correct?
No, sir.
You didn't go to the house at all?
No, sir.
Okay, you went directly to South Shore?
Correct.
And when you were at South Shore, your purpose was to, as you say, overwatch. Well, that basically is she was in custody at that point, right?
Correct.
So one of your obligations was is to, I guess, guard the unconscious person to make sure what, to do what? Just to stand there?
Correct.
Okay. And you did.
He's so good. Hospital,
right? Yes, sir.
And you made your observations of her, you know, bandaged or whatever, laying in the bed, and she was not conscious, correct?
Correct.
And at some point, the decision was made medically that they were going to have her med-flighted through the Boston Hospital, Brigham and Women's, right?
Correct.
And that was by way of the helicopter?
Yes, sir.
You had a helicopter ride into Boston with her, right?
Yes, sir.
You were overwatching her in the helicopter again, right?
Yes, sir.
She still had not gained consciousness at all?
Correct.
She wasn't talking to you or medical staff or anybody, right?
Correct.
She was already had the tubes and stuff in her mouth coming out, and she was bandaged up and wrapped up and basically laying down in the gurney in the helicopter, right?
Yes, sir.
So when she gets to Brigham and Women's Hospital, they bring her into the emergency room, right?
Yes.
And that room was loaded with equipment, boxes, wires, tubes, buzzing, beeps, lights, things of that nature, right?
Yes.
Life-saving equipment that was in there, right?
Yes.
Very small room, wasn't it?
Yes.
Kind of hard to maneuver?
There was enough space for the medical staff to maneuver.
All right. And how many police officers were overwatching the unconscious person while she was in the emergency room at Brigham and Women?
Two.
That would be you and the other officer from Duxbury.
Yes, sir.
At what point did the state police officers arrive in the hospital?
I don't recall them coming to the hospital.
Did you ever see state police in the hospital?
Possibly at South Shore Hospital, but not in Boston.
So you're in Brigham and Women's, off of the helicopter, into the emergency room for a day, is that correct?
Correct, 16 hours.
Did you go back there again after that day?
To South Shore Hospital?
No, Brigham and Women's Hospital.
No.
So you're limited to the time that you were there as to the you and your brother officer were there in the room with her, correct?
Yes.
And a number of nurses and doctors, right?
Yes.
Fair to say it was chaos. It was like bedlam in that room, wasn't it?
Yes, very busy.
And you don't remember any other police officers? How about internal police officers from Brigham and Women's Hospital? Do you recall them being there?
There may have been security, but I do not recall.
So is it your testimony that you do not recall any other police being in that room or outside the room when you were there?
Correct.
Now, at some point, police were detailed, if you know, to sit outside the room to guard the door. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what were you guiding against?
I just want to take a moment to answer this question. This is one of my favorite things that Reddington keeps doing. Ellie says, Mel, Reddington repeatedly asked the officers and others how many officers were at the hospital. Any idea what he's getting at with that? Yeah, he's getting at, and he's already made this sort of quip about it. You were there guarding an unconscious woman is what he keeps saying. So his point is that, yes, she had done these horrific things to her children. She had unalived her own children, and then she tried to unalive herself. It's very obvious that there's a mental health issue happening here, and she's not a danger to society. She is already in a hospital. She already has a giant wound on her throat, on both of her wrists, or a wrist. I'm not sure if it was both of her wrists, but on her wrists. And she has jumped out of a window and is now paralyzed. And they had her handcuffed to the bed. Like, where is she going to go? She can't move. And they had a bunch of officers guarding her like 24 hours a day. This woman isn't going anywhere. She can't walk. So he keeps making the point that, like, they were already, like, they were just doing too much, basically. This woman isn't going anywhere. She cannot get out of the bed to move to go anywhere. Nor could anybody really come in and wheel her out. She's connected to all these machines. She's not even conscious. She had a code blue in the middle of the night, which you're going to hear about in just a moment. Like, the idea that they were wasting so many resources on guarding an unconscious, paralyzed woman is just unconscionable. I mean, it's just stupid, really, is what it is. And they were already treating her. I think his point is that they were already treating her like a criminal before they had done any investigation. So, in my opinion, obviously.
No rule.
Anybody coming to visit?
Right, because nobody was allowed to visit, right?
Correct.
And then while you were there in the early morning hours, about 2:24 or something like that, there was, as you said to the jury, a code, right?
Yes.
And again, that kind of amped up the bedlam at that point, didn't it?
Yes, sir.
There were people running from all over, and you could hear on the microphone, code blue, with the room being identified, right?
Yes.
And that meant that she was dead or dying, right?
Yes.
She was chained to the hospital bed too, wasn't she?
I do not recall her being handcuffed.
You don't?
No, sir.
Okay. Do you recall when you left?
The Brigham, sir?
Yes.
The next morning around 10, from what I remember.
Okay. And you were relieved by who?
Officer Daly from the Duxbury Police Department and Officer Johnson from the Duxbury Police Department.
All right. So you've got two Duxbury police officers. To your memory, were there any other law enforcement officers?
Not with them, though.
How about on their own? Did you observe other law enforcement officers come in that room or outside the room?
No, sir.
And then that was the end of your shift and you left?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir. Right.
Counsel, anything further?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. Nice. Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to the next witness.
Mark Tenowitz.
Mark Tenowitz. I don't believe, yeah, he does not cross Mark Tenowitz.
Do you want to go to sidebar?
Yep. Of course, they're going back to sidebar. Of course they are. Let me tell you a little bit about Tenowitz, though. Tenowitz. He's an emergency room physician. So he was stationed at Beth Israel Deaconess in Plymouth. And the reason I don't want to go over this testimony is because we're talking about 3-year-old Dawson. And Tenowitz was one of the emergency room doctors who spent 40 minutes trying to revive him. And of course, Reddington chose not to cross him because he is not going to further the torture of listening to what happened to these poor babies. The next person we have up, let me see. Yeah, I think Reddington crosses Melissa Arcadepain. Let's see.
Trudy Buckingham.
You're
under
the call with Melissa Arcadepain?
Arcadepain, yeah. Okay. Let me just get to Reddington's cross here. Melissa Arcadepain, I can tell you just a little bit about what was on the direct. Let's see. Where did she go? Hold on. What? I don't know why I don't have her on my... Oh, there she is. Okay, hold on. I'm sure this is fascinating watching me just like trying to find my shit everywhere. She was the supervisor of specimen processing department at South Shore Hospital. She goes through laboratory protocol and chain of custody. So she talks about how patient samples come in, like blood and urine, how they arrive at the lab from the emergency room via a pneumatic tube system. And when she said that, the only thing I could think of, for those of you who are old enough to remember, do you remember the pneumatic tube at the bank when you would do the drive up and you would put your like checks or your deposit or whatever in the little tube thing, and then you would put it in the thing and it would go. That's what I was picturing. And I hope that's what it is for that, for the delivery of blood and urine at this hospital. she testified that the South Shore Hospital had received a formal preservation notice from law enforcement requesting that specific medical samples for Lindsay be held because of where we are right now. And that she had Lindsay's blood and urine samples, and they were placed in a designated specimen bag alongside the preservation notice and secured in a separate bin inside the specimen refrigerator. And then she, on January 31st, 2023, she personally retrieved the bagged samples, verified that they belonged to Lindsay Clancy, and officially handed over 6 vials of blood and 1 vial of urine to a Massachusetts state trooper. And then I don't really even think we have to go into Kevin Reddington's cross on this one, because he just was focusing on clarifying, you know, sort of standard hospital record keeping protocols and confirming that the samples were never touched in storage prior to being released to the state police. And that was pretty much it for, am I right about that? Hold on. There might've been one more. No, I think Arcade of Pain was the last one. Yes. Hold on. Sorry. I'm talking to myself at this point. yeah, she starts at 341. No, there's another guy. I thought there was. There was another guy. Hold on. This guy.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your name for the record?
Mark Joseph Tanarowitz.
Tanarowitz. He's the ER doctor we just talked about. And then this is
the course of years. Over 20 years. You said that you were the specimen processing supervisor.
Not much here. I mean, and then Kevin Reddington really just gets up and talks to her about procedure, and that's about it. And then I want to hear what the judge has to say so we know what's happening next. I believe we're coming back Monday morning at 9 a.m. Oh, you know what it is? They take a big old sidebar here. That's why I was like, wait a minute. Okay, yeah, there it is.
Jury, talking to counsel, we are going to break it today, all right? What I was talking about over here is in regards to the schedule, where we are. We are, if not on schedule, at a schedule, right? And much of it is because of the work when you're not here. Counsel is going over some of the exhibits and some of that, and that's part of some of these breaks, at least for you, all right? So I just kind of want to let you know that's what's going on. So I'm going to excuse you. I know it's been a long week anyway. So we're going to take a break till Monday, all right? And on Monday, the schedule anticipation will start about 9. Maybe a little bit later than that, but I ask you to be here ready to go at 9. There's some matters I may have to talk to counsel, so it might give a little bit late start for you on Monday. And then the anticipations will go most of the day, all right? Like I said, we are well on schedule, if not ahead. What I want to remind you now, which you know I'm going to remind you, that you're going to be not here for a couple of days. It's very important. You've heard some of the evidence. You haven't heard all of the evidence, all right? You haven't heard the law that you need to apply to this, so you have to keep an open mind. And the best way to do that is don't talk about this with anyone. Don't do any research. Don't watch anything. If something comes on, turn it off. And just like I said, if you're talking to somebody, it brings up, blame me. All right. The judge said, I am not to talk about it. I'm not to listen to anybody talking about this and shut them down right away. I appreciate all the work that you put in so far. I look forward to seeing you on Monday.
That'll be that. So we're going to, I will be watching on Monday after I'm done with my stream with Emily. Leah said this was 100% preventable. The system failed Lindsay Clancy. The system failed Cora, Dawson, and Callan. There is no good outcome here. Can only hope it brings changes to women's health care overall. Agreed. And then somebody mentioned the bruise. Yeah, Jessica mentioned the bruise part bothered me. My boys are so crazy running around. So in one of the testimony with the ER doctor, this is, again, the prosecution being disingenuous, in my opinion, because the prosecution asked about a bruise that was on Dawson's leg. But then it later came out that the bruise was mostly from they had to inject a needle all the way down into his bone. And that's where that bruising came from, as far as I understand it. But also, little kids get bruises because they run around and they have a lot of fun. But again, it felt to me like a moment where the prosecution was trying to hint that Lindsay had done something to her kids. And I just think it's gross. I think what they're doing is disgusting. I do still like the judge, Lady Harlot. Mel, I'm curious about your opinion of the judge now that we've been in court for a few days. Do you still like him? I do. I think that he seems kind. He seems balanced for the most part. I love the way he talks to the jury. He reminds me, I bet, you know, he and Kevin Reddington come from the same like old school, you know, law background. I think he's good so far. I think this is a tough case. I think that he's not showing any frustration with either side in front of the jury, which I think is helpful. So I'm going to, you know, I'm leaving my opinion of him open right now. If he makes some bad calls, maybe then I'll question it. But a fair judge making a couple of bad calls isn't something that I would be that upset about, because I think that does happen all the time. It's when I can feel the judge's bias. That's when I get really frustrated. You know, when I know what side the judge is on, that bothers me quite a bit. So, and I haven't seen that from this judge. He knows this is a very delicate, sensitive case. Oh no, that comment was fine, Jessica. Nope. Yeah, the feeling, this is going back to the bruise on Dawson's leg. I can't remember if it was Reddington. I think it was Reddington who got it out of the ER doctor that they had to put a very large needle into his leg and it went into the bone. And because of that, that's what caused the bruising. And so that had to be documented in reports, but obviously the prosecution jumped on it to make it seem like something else. And that's gross. Ugh. The scene log. Yeah. So just on B said, can we talk about the scene log? Canton could never. I don't even think that it's that Canton could never. It's that they chose not to for very, very specific reasons, which are Brian Albert and Brian Higgins and John O'Keefe and Kevin Albert and all the cops and all the family members and all the Alberts and all the cover up. Every time I see another case coming out of the Commonwealth, I notice how well, for the most part, they document everything and they document evidence and they, you know, close off crime scenes and they do all the proper technique and things that, you know, that cops are supposed to do when there's a crime scene. And yet, for some reason, when a Boston cop was found on the lawn at 34 Fairview, they did all the wrong things. They did a sloppy, sloppy job. So, yeah, seeing more scene logs here, like crime scene logs, and seeing all the detail, it should tell everybody what happened in Canton. Joy says, I like the judge. He has cut off nonsense from both sides. Yep. Agreed. Okay. Yeah, it was the cross. He went up to make sure they heard. Yeah, the jury, you mean. Yep. A lesser girl, Amy, says, I don't know if she had the DNR at that point, but does not know for sure. She would have had the DNR. They mentioned that she had the DNR. I mean, the DNR happens beforehand. she wasn't conscious to sign a new DNR. So she might have had that on record, maybe from when she'd been in the hospital with the kids. I'm not really sure. But the DNR is do not resuscitate. She did have a code blue, and they, I think that, I don't think that they were bringing her back as much as they were preventing her from dying, as I understand it. I don't know. I'm not a medical professional. Just to dig down a little bit deeper on the Reddington is making the issue about the cops being there and her being handcuffed to the bed, and it was a really small room and it was crowded and it was difficult to work in there because there were cops in there. I understand that cops have to, you know, watch over their suspects. I don't know at what time the cops named her as the culprit, the suspect, the whatever you want, the target of the operation. I feel like the first 16 hours may not have been enough time to figure out what happened, even though Michael Proctor likes to figure out cases in the first 16 hours. So I'm not sure. I understand that she's a suspect, but all I'm saying is that she didn't need to be chained to the bed, and they could have just like not been in the room with her. I know that they were standing outside, but it sounds like they were also in the room at some points. I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't be watching, you know, prisoners that way. I get that. But you know, much like Kelsey Fitzsimmons, much like other folks who have been arraigned from hospital beds, or, I mean, Kelsey had a bullet in her chest and they still, you know, did court stuff from the hospital bed. I just think it's taken it a little too far sometimes. If you've got a woman who is unconscious and is paralyzed, isn't going anywhere, like, just stay out of the way a little bit. Like, sit outside the room. It's not like she's going to jump out of the bed and run. She's not even awake. There's no need to handcuff her to the bed. It was overkill, in my opinion. let's see. Reddington said he didn't get the DNR in place for at least 5 days. Yeah. So when they had the code blue, it sounds to me like they did not have a DNR based on what Dizzy is saying. I don't know if that's true, but if they didn't have a DNR on file, then they would have to resuscitate her. Okay. I disagree that just because she was in the ER that they would ignore a DNR. A DNR is a legal document that says do not resuscitate. If that's what the patient signed, then they have to follow the patient's wishes. The viewing was for three different places. The viewing was the restaurant, CVS, and the Clancy home. They didn't do it three times, I don't think. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. This Mastiff Mama says 100% incorrect. We need documentation of a properly filled out DNR before we can honor it. But last thing we want to do is doing CPR on someone who doesn't want it. Let's see. Yeah, it sounds like, I think Dizzy said this, that Reddington didn't even get the DNR for 5 days. So, okay. It was in his opening. You're right. You're totally right. I remember this now. Let's see. I question whether she wrote on dry erase board about needing a lawyer because she was handcuffed to a bed. From personal experience, they tied hands to the bed while intubated. Hard to write. I don't know the answer to this. It sounds like Kevin Reddington
and Dr. Zeisel were the first people in the room, basically. Or they said that she wasn't able to see any of her family for 7 days. Yeah, they split up the jury in three groups. Yeah. What's the question? Am I missing something? Oh, because we're saying that they did it three times. They had three groups and they went to three different locations. Okay. I think that's all I have for you guys today. I got a bunch of kids. I just got a text. They're on their way back. So I'm going to have to cut this short because it's going to be crazy in here in just a minute. I really appreciate y'all. Thanks for the thoughtful conversation. Thanks for being kind to one another. This is a tough case and I don't want us fighting about little details. I do appreciate you all and I am looking forward to Monday. I can't wait to see you there. I will be back at 9:30 a.m. Eastern with Emily C. And we're going to be going through some FOIA and find out stuff. And then I'm going to update you more about what happens on court on Monday. And I will see you on the flip side. Thanks, y'all. I appreciate you. Thanks for the tips. Thanks for the memberships. Thanks for all you do. You're the best audience ever. Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, allegedly. I'm Smile.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Happy gay summer, Mel.
Happy hump day, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm not humping anybody. I'm Rebecca Lavoie.
Happy Saturday, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
Oh, no.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and my mic is muted.
Good morning, everybody. I am Mel Barrett.
I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and that's Briscoe.
And welcome to Something's Off, a true crime podcast where we swat the haters aside with our astute takes and humor and joy.
Oh, the joylessness of those people. Hags.
You hear it first in the break in the story. One little crack and the whole thing gets wary. A witness swears, but the timeline bends. A smile too smooth and the trail just ends. Mel Barrett says, hold up, look. Rebecca Lavoie follows every thread. If it feels too neat, then it's not the truth. There's a shadow line running through the room. Something's off, something's off. You can feel it in the bones. Something's off, something's off. When the facts won't come home. Something's off, something's off. And the case won't stay in place. Something's off. We're the ones who chase.
This is literally because it's 100. It's been happening for the past like day.
Oh dear God. Everywhere's a hotspot when Dr. Wolf is on the TV. Am I right? Everywhere's a hotspot when Dr. Wolf is on the TV. I'm sorry. This is very funny.
What are you laughing about?
Because you're just sitting there waiting for the video to start.
I was listening this whole time. You
listening to what? You're not playing anything. And now you're frozen. God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let me text Mel. Let me call Mel. I'm going to call Mel.
No, I'm not answering your call. I'm not doing it. Why is it? Oh, Jesus.
Maybe go back on the Wi-Fi.
I am back on the Wi-Fi. Can you hear me now? Can we do the show now? Should we do the show now? Rebecca? Rebecca, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Hello, internet! Hello!
Hello? Hello, worldwide interwebs. Can you hear me? Let's do this. I have to look at my phone over here.
We're gonna go members only.
We're the ones who chase. Yeah, we're the ones who chase. Did that witness just blink three times? Something's off.